Thank you very much, Tanya. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is the IRCPT call on the 3rd of February 2014. On the call today, we have Volker Greimann, Mikey O'Connor, Barbara Knight, James Waddell, Andy Graves, Graham Banton, and Avi Dorian. We have an apology from Paul Diaz. And from staff, we have Lars Hoffman and myself, Natalie Peregrin. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Okay, thank you, Natalie, and welcome everyone to IRCPD Working Group Call for the 3rd of February, one day after Groundhog Day and really uneventful anticlimactic Super Bowl. I hope everyone's doing well. As per our usual order of business, does anyone have any update to their statement of interest? If so, please indicate in the Adobe room. Okay, silence is golden, so we'll move on then to the draft agenda, which is posted on the right-hand column of the Adobe chat room. Does anyone have any updates or comments to that agenda? All right, seeing none, then we'll just consider that agenda adopted, and we will proceed accordingly. And when we last left our heroes last Monday, we were discussing the recommendations. And since that time, there's been some traffic on the list, which I think is awesome. And most recently, I think earlier this morning, or perhaps it was late last night, Mikey submitted a draft that I think we see a snippet of it in our screen for those of you who are on the Adobe chat room. And Lars and Mikey, I believe, would we be circling back if we revisit charter question A, or should we proceed from here? Mikey, you and I discussed we were just kind of push off from this document, but we wanted to make sure that if there were any other edits suggested outside of this draft, that those were captured as well. So Mikey, go ahead.
Thanks, James. I think that what we could do is sort of, most of my edits are non-substantive. They're just changing the sentences around to make them a little bit easier to read. And so I think that what we could do is sort of pick up with the, I think it's the charter question B or C, where we left off last time. And I think the goal could be to get through all of the stuff today, mostly focusing on recommendations.
Okay.
And with the goal of making sure we haven't missed something really big or made some horrendous blunder. I think once we've got the rough outline of the recommendations settled, then we can circle back and start fine-tuning it a bit more. But that would be my thought for the day, if it were me.
In that case, we would then just focus, and I can't tell if I have scroll control or not. It doesn't appear that I do. We would just focus maybe just looking at the charter question and then skipping the issue description and the working group deliberations and move in directly to the draft recommendation.
Yeah, that's what. Sorry, I was muting myself. It's Mikey again. That's what I'd do, at least for this first pass.
All right.
And I see Lars is trying to get in the queue too. He may have some thoughts on this as well.
Lars.
Thanks, James and Mikey. Yeah, I think it's a good idea to focus on the recommendations. Just to circle back very quickly on the different versions, I actually merged them up. And so this version that's in the Adobe room right now should have the edits from last week as well as Mikey's edits in it, just so you know.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
Great job, Lars. Did you send that to the list yet?
No, I have not. I've just loaded it up to the Adobe room. So I thought when there are more edits during this call, I'll then send out the combined one onto the list later on.
Okay.
Okay, awesome. Okay, well then, I guess let's dive in. We've got about 52 minutes to see how far we can get through these recommendations. I don't know that I have scroll control. I don't think I need it, to be honest. If we can just start with the recommendations for charter question A, and just a reminder, charter question A is talks about reporting requirements for registries and dispute providers. And if we go down to our preliminary recommendation, we are recommending that there should be reporting requirements. For example, the outcomes of rulings by both the registry operators and the resolution providers. And we cited the Asian Domain Name Dispute Resolution Center as an example for how those should look, because we felt that those were a good model of presenting the information that was relevant to any future cases or tabulating statistics on TDRP. And then I think that we recommend some specific language down here, modeling after the UDRP. So my open question on this recommendation is, and I'm just kind of putting this out to the group here, is do we need to account for whether or not we recommended removing GTLD registries, and should it be directed solely at the dispute resolution folks? Does anyone, Mikey, go ahead.
Thanks, James. It's Mikey. Yeah, I snuck that remove the registry layer recommendation into, I don't know, I think charter question C. And so we could indeed accommodate that.
Just strike that?
Yeah, we could change this language to make it consistent.
Okay.
And Lars, are you taking us to... I'm not sure where we're headed. Anyway, we had a bit of a conversation about where to put that, remove the registry layer, and I decided that since it came out of the conversation about charter question C, I sort of hacked it in. Let me get you to it. So apologies for making your eyes water, but it's down at the bottom.
A lot of purple.
Here.
Mikey was up late.
So if you see this section right in the middle of the page, the working group recommends that a TDRP be modified to eliminate the first level registry layer. That's the new recommendation. And then I hacked out a sentence or two, but it's at least in there now. And so to answer your question about this first one, yeah, we could back out the reference to the registry layer.
And then do we want to maybe, I'll wait till we get to this one, but I think we should add something about that the TDRP would become exclusively the purview of the dispute resolution providers. I saw Volker's hand go up and then come down. Volker, did you have, there you go.
Yes, just one question, because if I remember correctly, the TDRP has certain cases that never reach the providers and are resolved under the registry level, and for those, there would never be any reporting at all under this recommendation. Is that correct?
No, because we're removing the reporting requirement because we would be removing that registry layer entirely. So the reporting requirements and, indeed, all of the policy obligations would lie with the dispute resolution provider.
Ah, yes. Understood. Thank you.
Yeah, so they wouldn't escape. They would not be off the hook. Okay. So if we can strike, where it says all rulings, if we can strike both GTLD registry operators and, then it would just say by dispute resolution providers. And we can skip that whole section, and I think that should cover us and make us consistent with that other recommendation. And Mikey agrees. And I guess, does anyone disagree? The board is clear. Okay, awesome. Can we then move to charter question B? Charter question B, just as a refresh, whether additional provisions should be included in TDRP on how to handle disputes from multiple transfers, deliberations, etc. deliberations, observations, down to preliminary recommendations. Well, we should make the title consistent with above. I think we called that preliminary working group recommendations or something, so we should standardize that language, but here we go. The working group recommends that the TDRP be amended as follows. Transfers from a gaming registrar to a third registrar and all other subsequent transfers are null and void if the gaming registrar acquired sponsorship from the registrar of record through an invalid transfer, as determined through the dispute resolution process set forth in the transfer dispute resolution policy. So, what we are saying is that if a TDRP is initiated, the relevant domain name should be locked against future transfers, correct? And that if anything, based on the implementation of that outcome, it could reverse all subsequent transfers. And then we established this statute of limitations to launch a TDRP. We extended it from 6 months to 12 months. Are there any concerns regarding that? I think that I'm not saying I have any objections to this being a recommendation. I think that we need to editorialize here. Sorry, folks, if I'm blurring the line, but I just believe that that one may we may be surprised. We could be caught off guard if we don't correctly anticipate some of the pushback that we might receive on that 6 to 12 month change. So we should, I believe, make sure that we have all of our ducks in a row and substantiate that as much as possible in the deliberations. So I just don't want it to just kind of drop it in there, because for some slices of the community, let's say a narrow but perhaps very vocal slice of the community, that could be interpreted as a very significant change, and they will want to see the appropriate justification for that. I'll go with Mikey and then Volker. Mikey?
No, I'll let Volker go first. That's fine.
Okay, Volker.
Thanks, Mikey. Just one thing, nothing substantial here, but I think the intention here that we're driving for is that the statute of limitations would be extended to 6 to 12 months from the invalid transfer, not from any subsequent transfer. Is that correct? If so, we should probably make that clear in the language as well. Because if we are not making it clear, then somebody could think that each and every subsequent transfer would again trigger the extension and therefore allow a TDRP.
Yes, a good point. Subsequent transfers could keep this thing open to disputes almost indefinitely. So I think we can probably make that specific, and I would ask that Lars please capture that as some language that we'll need to insert here, and perhaps it's as simple as at the end of that sentence saying from 6 months to 12 months from the initial transfer period. I think that would be the simplest fix. Mikey, you're up.
Thanks, James. I just wanted to chime in support of your notion that our justification for this is fairly thin in this version of the report. And I noticed that as I was going through it. So we do need to beef that up and have a good, solid justification as to why we're proposing this. I don't think it's hard to do, but we haven't done it yet.
Right, I agree completely. I think that, and I think that it's in the given the amount of time that the working group spent on other charter questions, we may have maybe this conversation might not be as fresh in our minds. But I can assure you that for certain segments of the population, this is the only recommendation that will matter to them, and they will zoom in on this immediately. So. So I see Rob has posted something interesting in the chat about our obligations currently under WDRP to contact the registrar on an annual basis to update contact information. So having an annual contact is not unexpected. Registered for 2 years. Rob, I'm trying to read your chat into the record. I was wondering if you would maybe want to speak to these two points, because I think they're important and we want to capture them. I hate to put you on the spot if you don't have audio or something like that. He's still typing. So, oh, he's still waiting to get through to the operator. Okay, well, we'll just hang on there. But Rob, for the record, Rob has indicated that existing policies already require an annual contact by the registrar. So even though folks perhaps do not expect annual invoices if they register the domain name for more than 1 year. Anything else relevant to this particular recommendation? I think we've nailed it here. I think that we just, as we said, need to clarify that a little bit or qualify that recommendation a little bit, as Volker pointed out, so that it doesn't become a perpetual clock. And as Mikey and I discussed, I think we need to beef up our justifications and our rationalizations earlier in the report for this 6 to 12 months change. Any objections? Okay, I think we can move on. Thanks, everyone, for contributing to that. Charter question C is the big one. Should we go in order? We go out of order? Oh, Rob, welcome to the phone bridge. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, it was simply in support of the changing the amount of time that it can be raised from 6 months to 12 months. That some registrars don't have very much contact with the registrants. Our average number of years of registration is 2.7, in that the majority of customers register for, you know, 2, 3, or more years. And so they wouldn't expect to get very many contacts from us. However, they are all told, and therefore should all expect, that at least once a year we're going to badger them about WDRP and things like that. So it may take them some time after a dodgy transfer has happened before they realize that the domain isn't with us, unless they're sitting there pressing F5 to refresh the whois every 5 minutes. Whereas if they don't get that WDRP reminder, that would trigger in their head, hang on, I haven't heard from Astutium for a while. And therefore, that may make them come to us and ask, or go and look it up themselves. So that was sort of one of the things I thought would support the migration from being a 6 month limit to a 12 month limit.
Okay, thanks, Rob. I think that's an excellent point, and something that we need to perhaps capture in our justification is that if a domain name were hijacked or involved in some sort of a disputed transfer, we would want to make sure that we had at least that refresh period for WDRP for the registrant to become aware of that and to file the dispute.
Yeah, because if a domain's hijacked, it may not necessarily get new name servers or redirected somewhere or anything done to it at the time. It may get left for a while. So
right.
I think 12 months is an okay amount of time. I mean, longer might be better, but you don't want it to be an indefinite amount of time. You do need cutoffs for these things. And I think a year is long enough.
Okay. I think we're all in agreement here, and it's good, helps us shore up our justification on that. Okay, issue C was a very, very lengthy discussion. I think it consumes probably 65% of the work of the working group thus far. Because it's a very important issue with a number of dependencies and implications. And the charter question was whether or not dispute options for registrants should be developed and implemented as part of the policy, as registrants are currently dependent upon registrars to initiate TDRP on their behalf. And so quite a bit of discussion here, and want to make sure, and this is really for Lars, is that we've captured everything we need there, because to adequately reflect that the working group spent a significant amount of time on this particular question. So here we go. The working group, and we would change the title again to make it consistent with the others, preliminary working group recommendations. The working group recommends that the registrants should not be able to directly initiated TDRP. The working group recognizes the need that use cases identified as a result of its deliberations on this issue see Annex C. Oh, that's excellent. Are adequately addressed. As most of the cases relate to inter-registrant disputes, the implementation of IRTPC Part C, recommendation number 2, is relevant in this context. The working group recommends that upon implementation of IRTPC 2, the IRTPD Part D implementation review team and staff should determine whether the majority of use cases have been addressed. If there are significant use cases that have not been addressed by the implementation of IRTPC-2, that group should formulate a request for an issue report to review the remaining use cases and consider whether any additional dispute resolution mechanisms or changes to TDRP should be developed. That request should be forwarded to the GNSO Council for consideration. That request, the request for the issues report, correct? I kind of lost the handle of that.
That's
Mikey
correct.
And I we're not wordsmithing it, but that one needs some smithing.
that paragraph still needs work. I will own that one.
Okay.
Sorry about that. I was laughing while you were reading it. It was pretty rugged.
Yeah, I'm doing my best here, but I think.
Yeah, that was you did good. You made it all the way through, but that was a rough script to follow for sure.
Down to the second one then. The information on the ICANN website describing registrant options with regard to inter-registrar and inter-registrant transfers is not as clearly formulated and properly displayed as it should be. So we are asking them to change that, right? Maybe we should add something there as well.
Well, that's the next paragraph.
Oh, I see. Okay. The working group recommends that visibility and content of the ICANN website devoted to offering guidance to registrants with transfer issues ought to be improved. Special attention should be devoted to these pages. Boom, boom, boom. And that's just customer service 101. I mean, we saw the statistics. We know that transfers are the bulk of the problem. So I think this should be fairly self-evident. The working group appreciates that the TDRP is designed for registrars, but registrants are also involved in these disputes and need clear guidance on the ICANN website as to who they can go to for assistance and under what circumstances. The working group recommends that the TDRP be modified to eliminate the first level registry layer of the TDRP. And then this is, I like Mikey's sidebar comments here. The working group notes that the number of TDRP disputes is very small and that the number of registries is increasing dramatically with the arrival of the new GTLD program or the expansion, I guess, or whatever we want to say there. There is a very low volume of requests for a process that requires substantial registry resources to properly support, resulting in high costs for registries and low quality for registrars. I'd like to recommend that we add something here. I think it's something that we discussed in this context, but I don't think it's captured, not in the recommendation, maybe it's captured somewhere else, is the idea that it will become, as the number of registries proliferate, it will become harder and harder to enforce any kind of consistency on these outcomes. So I think maybe if we can capture that in there, that would be good as well. And I see Mikey's giving that a thumbs up. So, Mikey, can I ask you to take the wheel for just a moment here as we go through this here. I need to step aside for just 2 minutes here.
No problem.
Okay.
So that's where we are. And so are people comfortable with this series of recommendations pending a substantial rewrite of one paragraph that was eye-watering? I really was laughing out loud while James was reading it. But I'm just curious if there's any strong objection to any of this. Again, not at the wordsmithing level. One of the things that I'm going to... I thought that I had that in here.
I'm back, Mikey. Sorry.
Oh, that was quick. Anyway, one of the things that
we just got notification that a neighbor was in a car accident, so we're just rushing around a little bit. So sorry about that.
Yeah, Well, one of the things I'm working on here, Lars, did you take out my little rant about specifying that these links to this material be placed above the fold, or is that somewhere else?
Okay, this is Lars. I don't think I've taken anything out that you've put
okay.
in there.
Well, then I just hallucinated that I put it in. Anyway, one of the things that I am involved with is, as some of the rest of you are, is this redesign of the ICANN webpage. And it's occurred to me that we need to get the essentially registrant help links prominently displayed on the website in policy so that the 19th subsequent redesign of the web page doesn't decide, oh, that's not friendly enough, oh, that's not cool enough, oh, it's got to go. And so I'm just making a note for you, Lars, that we need language in there that you and I can figure out, and I thought I wrote that says this should be above the fold on the main ICANN webpage and write it in such a way that it forces the ICANN web maintainers to put it there forever. Back to you, James.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Lars, is that a new hand?
Yes, just very briefly. Mikey, I think you added, I think I found it, I think you put it into charter question C, actually, on page 32.
Okay.
So that's where you stuck it. So it's in there, it's just not under C, it's under D.
Oh, good. Okay, well, so that's an editing note for you and me then, Lars. We should pull this paragraph out of this we should put all that stuff in one place, either all of it in here or all of it down there, and not split it the way it is now. That was a goof. Sorry.
Okay. So let's see here. Where are we on charter question C? Did we reach the end of the recommendations?
Yeah, that's it for the recommendations.
Can I ask that we... scroll up just a little bit here.
I'll give you back scroll. There you
okay.
go.
Oh, okay. I don't know that I can... Oh, there we go. Yeah, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure we were up front with the direct answer to the charter question, which we are in the first. So that's good. Okay. So does anyone have any objections to where we landed on this? We still have a ways to go, I think, in fleshing this out a little bit and making sure that our recommendations are crisp. And capture the use cases, and I think address all of the items that we discussed and identified in Annex C. I think that we wrestled with this one for quite some time. So I want to make sure that when we send around another draft, that everyone takes a close look. You know, if you're only going to read one recommendation out of this working group, please make it recommendation C. But all of them are important, of course. It's just that. Want to make sure this one, we've identified all the complexities and want to make sure we got them all. We didn't leave anything on the floor. Okay, so let's then move to charter question D. And we'll start the reading with the charter question, whether requirements or best practices should be put into place for registrars to make information on transfer dispute resolution options available to registrars. And then we have our description and our deliberations, and then we have our preliminary working group recommendation. The working group recommends that the improvements to the ICANN website, as referenced above, regarding the display of information on the inter-registrar transfer policy and transfer dispute resolution policy is regularly updated. The working group further recommends that links to this information are always prominently displayed above the fold on the ICANN homepage. I hope that's understood, right? Above the fold? Or we can just say prominently displayed. Either one is fine. Lars got it. Okay.
Yeah, what I was trying to do there, James, was force the language in a way that reminded the web designers, because the web designers sort of went, oh, that stuff about help, we don't want that on the new version of the web page. I was sort of going, no, man, that's the most important part of the web page. But it's not friendly to newcomers. Well, that's too bad, you know.
You know, it's like if you go to the Apple site and the first thing you see is the iTunes agreement, it's everybody's eyes glaze over. But it is important.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure above the fold is understood, because I see more and more of these websites adopting what I would call a continuous scroll format.
Right.
There's plenty of examples of, I think, newer websites where they just scroll on and on forever. So,
right.
Okay. As a matter of best practice, the working group recommends further that all ICANN certified, ICANN accredited registrars prominently display a link on their homepage to this on the ICANN website. So first, I would recommend that we suggest accredited rather than certified. And there's language in the RAA about displaying items on the website, and I would suggest that we conform to that, which is, I think, something reasonably accessible and visible on the website, which basically gives the registrars the flexibility to include this information in relevant sections where they have already linked to, for example, the registrant rights and responsibilities, and who is lookup, and all other ICANN required links and information. So I think that if we can borrow from that language, Lars, we can put this. We're basically telling registrars, put this link with those other links that you're required to display, and that way compliance can find them all in one spot. Basically, don't bury them. With the goal of registrants having ready access to a centralized, up-to-date source of the support information. Okay, so we did some wordsmithing. Sorry, Mikey. But hopefully that was fairly non-controversial. Anyone have any comments or edits to this preliminary recommendation? A really healthy debate. Kind of more of a sidebar conversation going on in the chat, but not really. You guys should be careful showing statistics like that. Rob, you're up next. Go ahead.
Yeah, the question of sticking it on their homepage to ICANN, I'm not entirely sure we should be as a group dictating what people should stick on their website and where. That they have to have it, I agree with. That it should be where the other information about the domains or about domain transfers are, I also agree with. Saying it's got to be on the homepage, I think, is a step too far. Particularly, as you say, with lots of people moving towards the sort of slide it, swipe it, it's only got one page. They would obviously get it on the homepage because it's only one page, but those with a more defined structure, it wouldn't make sense to put it there. It would make sense to put it where the rest of the information about the transfers is.
Thanks, Rob. And yes, I agree, and that was sort of along the same lines as what I was recommending as well, which is if we borrow language from the RAA, we can keep it either appropriately with the transfers or appropriately with other ICANN-required links like to the Registrant Rights and Responsibilities document, mainly because, it makes compliance's life easier as well. They don't have to hunt around all the registrar web pages. They can find them all in one spot. Mikey, you're up.
This is Mikey. I agree with Rob and James. You know, that sentence getting modified the way James has described, lifting language out of the RAA sounds like a great plan. And then the sentence above it, I'm actually going to not back off on. I think on that one, we really do want to instruct ICANN. You know, this is sort of the shoe on the other foot, in a way. I think we do want to instruct ICANN to have this really prominent on their website, because for a very large proportion of the people that come to the ICANN website, they don't care about how cool we are. They care about finding a ready answer to a serious problem. So, Rob, I'm with you on your point. But I'm also going to amplify the point that I made about the ICANN page. Thanks.
Hey, thanks, Mikey. And I noticed that your comments received a green checkmark of agreement and endorsement from Aubrey. So thanks for that. I put myself in the queue because I just had a thought here, reading these last two recommendations and listening to the, I think, very reasonable suggestion from Mikey, which would be that, you know, the statistics that we've seen in this working group and other working groups indicate that transfer problems and transfer disputes are far and away the biggest problem, or the, let's say, the most common reason that someone off the streets would pick up the phone or fire up an email to contact ICANN. And it may even be their first exposure to the idea that an organization like ICANN even exists is, I've lost my domain name, what do I do? This recommendation, in the context of the previous recommendation that's requiring different links, and then this asking ICANN to feature them prominently on their website, starting to feel like we should make a recommendation that ICANN should have a single page or a single landing spot on their website for transfer problems. If they don't already, but a one-stop clearinghouse for resources, advice, help, you know, what ICANN can do, what ICANN can't do, when to contact the registry, when to contact the registrars. It seems like if we could get all of that wisdom and guidance into one place, and this is, we're really kind of making a recommendation over to staff at this point, but it feels like we could maybe really start to tackle that transfer issue head on, and it still might be the largest, by percentage, the largest issue that drives customer service tickets for ICANN, but maybe the overall volume could be cut down. So I'm going to lower my hand, but I think that maybe that we could get something like that captured in here. Mikey?
I just want to chime in full support of that. I think that what we've got right now is something that, you know, this is a best practice recommendation. It's not a policy recommendation, but I think one of the things that we want to do as a policy group is make sure that this recommendation is enforceable into the future. That when ICANN hires its next sexy web designer page person, that they run into a rock that says you can do anything you want to make the web page completely consistent with the standards of 2097, but one of the things which is a clear way to get to that set of resources and a very well-designed page that provides answers for people in that circumstance. And then I think we've done a great good for a lot of people.
Right, right, Mikey. I think it's definitely within the purview of this group, especially as the last transfer group, to note that we keep bumping into this reality that transfers are, you know, that there's a dump truck on ICANN's doorstep every week or every month of transfer problems, and that it really should be a better resource on their website to highlight that. And, you know, maybe even to the point that they've created sub-sites and mini-sites for things such as the new GTLD program or the AOC reviews, and maybe transfer problems warrant a similar treatment. So, okay. Well, let's move into then charter question E. Does anyone have any further statements about this? I think we've come to a good place on B. So we're now going to charter question E. I think these last two are kind of slam dunks here. Whether existing penalties for policy violations are sufficient, or if additional provisions penalties for specific violations should be added into the policy. Observations, deliberations, recommendations. The working group concludes that the new policy, the new penalty structures, I see a double that there. The new penalty structures, which has come into place with the 2009 RAA and the 2013 RAA, are sufficiently nuanced to deal with IRTP violations. Therefore, the working group recommends no additional penalty provisions need to be added to the policy. The working group emphasizes that as a matter of principle, GNSO policy, consensus policy, should not have individualized sanction structures. Rather, it is desirable that the overarching RAA and, I'm assuming RA, penalty structures be sufficiently detailed to assure uniformity and consistency of policy violation penalties whenever necessary. We need to wordsmith that clearly, but I think it gets the point across that we don't think that each policy deserved its own penalty structure. I did find an exception to that, though, Mikey, which is the anti-tasting thing. So just for trivia night at one of these ICANN meetings, there's your example of a policy that does have its own sanctions structure built in. So any thoughts? I mean, I think this one was fairly non-controversial. I think certainly makes the life of contracted parties and compliance and all folks a little bit simpler. You violate this policy, it's a violation. You don't fix it, it's a breach. You have a breach, you don't fix the breach, you're de-accredited. It's really the same disciplinary structure as it would be for any other contract or agreement. So, reading here, Rob, and that's still a part of a sidebar conversation. So, any other thoughts
actually,
on this?
James,
one?
This Mikey? Is Mikey. Actually, that last bit isn't.
Oh, it isn't? Okay, sorry, Miss.
No, there, I think it's Rob brought up that the point that we made about the ICANN website also needs to roll over to the internic.net website, which is another site that ICANN runs, and I agree with that. It should be added to the list. So,
well, that's going back to charter question B, our recommendation.
Well, it's the newly combined BC business about ICANN having this information prominently displayed. I don't care who runs it; it's got to be on there.
Yeah.
Barry's saying the IATF runs it. I'm not sure that's true, but, you know, whatever it is, it's got to be in both.
What about IANA.org? We should have it.
Yeah, I think that we need to at a minimum, internic, because that's another place that people go. And if we cause a constitutional crisis by that, so be it.
Okay, I see that has, we're now getting a flurry of chat responses, so I think let's capture that idea, Mikey. We may need to find out where it goes, but let's capture that on ICANN's website and any other applicable or appropriate websites that are operated by ICANN, something like that. And then we can say, for example, internic.net, IAM.org, that sort of thing. Because they may launch new ones in the future as well, and we want to make sure we're going forward. So, okay, good catch, everyone. And did we want to revisit charter question E? I think everyone was kind of in agreement there. Any other thoughts on charter question E? Okay. Finally, charter question F. Whether the universal adoption and implementation of EPP auth info codes has eliminated the need for FOAs. And we're scrolling through deliberations to our recommendation. The working group does not recommend the elimination of FOAs. However, the working group notes that future technological advances may make some aspects of the current transfer process redundant and will need reconsideration by a future working group. I think that last paragraph is nice, but maybe not necessary. Future working groups, the future always has the right to come and undo anything we do here, right? So, Mikey, go ahead.
No, I changed to just agreeing in the chat.
Okay.
I was deep into the end of the editing cycle, and I was tired of slashing and burning, so I fully support that idea.
No problem. Okay. So that brings us, I think, to the end of our recommendations. What are folks thinking here? I mean, clearly there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Is it daylight or is it a train coming to smack us? I think we're getting close to the end here. I think we've still got some untangling to do with Charter Question C, and we've got some wordsmithing to do all around. But overall, I think we're starting to land someplace acceptable. So what would be our next steps then? Mikey, go ahead.
I think the question of the day today is, now that you've all had a chance to really look hard at all these recommendations, sort of file this away and carry around the following question for the next week, which is, have we missed anything that we thought we had discussed and agreed to? You know, and I may go back and dig through the mind maps and, you know, just some of the notes from all the previous calls and stuff as a refresher. I think this is the best time to find those, because if indeed we've hit all the recommendations we want to make, then we're in a pretty good position to polish this up for Singapore and carry on from there.
Okay, thanks, Mikey. I agree. That's really key now that we're seeing the initial report and the preliminary recommendations start to take shape. It's really important to make sure that we haven't forgotten anything. I'd go even a step further and say that if you see anything in here that, even though, you know, we believe everything that's been installed into these preliminary recommendations has at least rough consensus, wordsmithing pending, and some of the consensus TBDs, but I don't see anything in here that's required, that's really got the working group divided right down the middle. If anything did not enjoy at least some healthy level of support, it's not in here. That doesn't mean that something, when it goes outside to the wider world, might not generate some controversy. I think we identified, for example, the increasing the 6-month statute of limitations to 12 months. So we should probably look for other, tidbits like that are in this report, and keep an eye out for anything that could generate significant pushback or controversy, or even just questioning discussions. How did you guys get to this? Another one might be eliminating the registry layer. I think we've substantiated it fairly well in our report, but others might say, hey, you know, it costs, about half as much to initiate at the GTLD that it does at the dispute resolution provider. Why did you remove that more economical option from me? Well, I'm just playing hypotheticals now, but that's one possibility. So identifying those things, making sure that we are covered, and that kind of segues fairly nicely into agenda item 3, which is the face-to-face meeting in Singapore. The Singapore meeting, believe it or not, is going to be coming here at some point, and we will need to get some time on the calendar for this working group. Rather than have it be a working session or even a workshop, I feel like we're getting to the point where we can present these recommendations to a community workshop and then accept questions and feedback during that time. And I think hopefully the report might even be open for public comment during the Singapore meeting. I may be optimistic here. I'll have to check the calendar. But that may be one possibility as well. Does anyone have anything that they would or does anyone have any opposition to the idea of the Singapore session being being an open forum on these recommendations? Oh, I see Lars has his hand up, so we'll go with him first. Lars?
Thanks, James. It's just an administrative matter, as it were. So if anybody's got some substantial comments, that might come in first. But I just want to say that I spoke to Glenn already, who's coordinating the timetable for the various groups, the various GNSO groups that meet in Singapore. And I suggested a humane meeting time of 10:30 to 12 noon on Wednesdays, assuming that we might have a preliminary report out for public comment, an initial report out for public comment. We at least, even if that is not going to happen, have a report that we still want to present and take questions of and open the forum when we come back. So that will give us a 1.5 hour time slot on the Wednesday. But I mean, I, nothing is set in stone. I'm happy to adjust the time if people think otherwise might suit better.
Thanks, Lars. No, it's a dramatic improvement over the time slot that we are traditionally assigned to, which is very early in the morning. So I think, you know, the Singapore schedule is still very much out over the horizon, but I think that sounds like a good time. Chris, you're up next.
Thanks. No, I was more or less going to say the same, commenting that, you know, can we have a reasonable time slot, and sort of 10:30 on Wednesday does sound reasonable, because we have had some pretty early ones, haven't we, you know, 8 o'clock after the gala and things like that, and it's been naturally those sort of time slots had pretty sort of poor turnout, so I don't want the overall community to sort of think, oh, it's only IRTB doing one of their workshops again, and no need to attend, you know, so... We'll need to push it and get the word out that this is a presentation. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. Yep, I agree. Better this than the crack of dawn. Lars?
Sorry, James, it's an old hand.
Ah, okay. All right, thanks. I think that is our target then, that we would be Wednesday in Singapore at 10:30 in the morning. We would have an open mic session with the community to discuss the preliminary recommendations from our initial report, which in a perfect world, and I think that we can probably set this as a goal, would be open for comment as well during the Singapore meeting. So maybe perhaps, Lars, one of the takeaways would be to find out you know, when we would have to have this published you know, what sort of deadlines we would be up against to have this initial report either introduced at the Singapore meeting or open for comment by publishing it prior to the Singapore meeting or something like that. If you can maybe just get our calendar expectations synchronized, that'd be great.
James, just very quickly,
okay.
I think I have to double check, and I'm happy to send out by the list, but I'm pretty sure it's the 3rd of March that will be our deadline to open the public, to submit, the public forum we can open later, but to submit a document, an official document to be considered at the Singapore meeting, that needs to be, I think, the 3rd of March.
Which is fairly doable, I think, given where we are today. So I think we can keep that as in mind as a goal. But to get there, that means we need to continue to sand the rough edges off of this particular report and include some of the changes that we've identified in this. So I think perhaps the next steps would be to look for an updated draft on the list this week. Does that sound reasonable? Maybe by Wednesday or Thursday? And I got a green check from Lars. Excellent. And then would ask everyone to take a look at it. And then I guess, Mikey, would be beginning next Monday, we would then start a more comprehensive read-through, particularly of the recommendation language and the executive summary language, with an eye towards readability and wordsmithing a little bit on those. But having, you know, the bulk of the heavy lifting occurring on the mailing list wherever possible. Mikey?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, James. I think the other thing that we'll want to do in this next pass through is make sure that our justifications are really solid. I didn't spend as much time on those. And there are whole sort of, there's a whole section. I'm going to make your eyeballs water just a little bit. But if we go back, there's this deliberations of the working group section, which I didn't touch. And I think there's a fair amount of aligning to be done between this section and the section that I did chew through with a little more detail. So there's plenty left to do, but I think the thing that we can do is keep refining, 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 with the goal that if it's got a few rough edges, we'll go ahead and publish it anyway, because we'll have plenty of time to keep filing those off. And I think you're right. We're close enough that we should definitely set the goal of getting this in time for consideration at the Singapore meeting and work hard to meet that.
Right. Okay. So that gives us 1, 2, 3 full sessions then to review this, and I think that that can be done. At the top of the hour here, I think we are doing very well. Certainly thank everyone who's contributed on the list as well, and ask that that continue and for folks who are maybe saying, I'll pick up the pen when I get closer to the end. Well, I think now is the time. So looking forward to hashing out some of these final sections here on the list, and we get the recommendations in place, and we'll do exactly what Mikey suggested and go back and double check our justifications and make sure we're on solid ground there. And then I also do believe that we need to take an eye towards readability, with the simplest language being the best, because then that's easily translatable to other folks, and particularly non-English members of the community. So thanks everyone. Great session today, and I'll see you at the same time, same channel next Monday.
Thanks, James.
Thank you.
That's all.